up, everybody? This is Aaron Harwood back from the brink for another episode of Warcast.
He's back from the dead. Yep. This is episode 6. My name's James Morehouse. And what's your name?
I think my name is Shane.
Oh, great to have you in the studio.
Oh, my God.
Shane and Jay Cummins. How was your time off, Aaron?
It was withdrawal, you know. I still play some War Machine, yeah. I think not talking about it for a couple of weeks, though, kind of, like, put me out of my groove, yeah.
you've been rolling a few 5-pluses at the gym lately.
Yeah, actually just came straight from the gym to come
That's
here tonight.
That's an excuse, but...
Yeah. Tastes like tough rolls.
All right, so sweet. We have a pretty massive episode in store for you guys today. We've got
almost as
a
massive
bunch
as
of
me.
Oh, sick! The content been let down. We've got a bunch of updates. Our Fortnite, as usual, and an Ask Warcast. And then I've got an interview with an interesting lass called Beth from Western Australia, who's running a pretty phenomenal tournament over there, which will be worth tuning in for. We're going to do a model spotlight on Anastasia Debray, who has a really nice set of knives.
Before the episode. Her throwing knives are rate of fire 1, and in the artwork for her, she's quite clearly throwing 2 knives. So what's up there, Privateer
Press? It's in between turns.
I kind of want to know what's happening there.
Turns last a minute, man.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, if it takes a minute for a knife to
it's
get 5...
It's a slow
feet,
knife,
yeah.
Okay.
Temporal deceleration.
That's
there
it.
You go.
That's it. Explained.
Nerds. She's being run with E. Haley.
Nerds. Yeah. And then our discussion is a bit of a different one this week. It's actually been inspired by my girlfriend that we'll get to soon, but it's an interesting one. Actually, speaking of my girlfriend, I've got to mention this now. I woke up in the middle of the night and I sleep talk and sleep walk and do funny things. I woke up in the middle of the night the other night and I rolled over and I was half awake, so I can't really remember, but she was awake. And apparently I said, "Hey, Jen, Evlad's feet, you can only use it on character models, and we're both obviously characters, so you're going to have to use it on the fridge." And she just looked at me like, "What?" And I was like, "What? What?"
Yeah, James. Is James quite special?
I dream about this game. Anyway, so first and foremost, just like last episode, we have a new website.
Actually, speaking... we'll go back to the whole dream thing, just to pull it back out of it. I was telling you the other day that I had a dream that I was playing in the Super Series, the Canberra Super Series final, and last round lost to Jeff Galea, but won every round after, and like just edged into the Super Series. And then I woke up and I'm like, sick, don't have to worry about that anymore. And literally about 3 hours later at breakfast, I realised that it was a dream. I was like so elated. And then I'm just like, that didn't actually happen.
It's like those dreams where you wake up, you go to work, you do a full day of work, and you're just like, oh man, thank God that's over. And then your alarm goes
roll
off.
Over, you're like, see, 7:20. That's
AM. So
anyway, we're all freaks, is the moral of the story. Alright, so yeah, we do, like last episode, have a new website. Hooray. Now, various reasons for having to do that. We've done a full proper server migration.
Yeah, I suppose you could call it that. Yeah, we migrated from the online WordPress format to WordPress.org, which is a self-installed thing on a properly hosted website, which means we can do proper analytics, we can host more stuff, we can, you know, just do more with it. Yeah. And
you'll notice it's not being redirected to Warcast, Blogcast, Podcast, .wordpress.sweden.denmark.org. But no, it's good. It's like a real actual website on the internet now. We get proper statistics, so if we find out that, you know, 99% of our listeners are from Sweden, we can talk more about Swedish tournaments.
We might do Swedencast.
Swedencast. Yeah,
yeah. I'm already saving for the America trip, guys.
But basically, it gives us more relevant stuff to tell you guys, tell sponsors. We lost about a week worth of numbers of downloads in there, so it'll be good to see if it's spiked up. We're getting a good amount of downloads, so it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friend.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, and like we said, even if they don't play War Machine, it's like normal people like listening to Nerds at 2.
Yeah, one of my mates who's a DJ and who met Shane the other night at a party, who's also a DJ, they got talking and it turns out he listens to our podcast. No idea what he's listening to, but he enjoys listening.
Yeah, a couple of my mates listen to it and they're like, you guys are hilarious. What are you talking about?
You should put this on a comedy channel.
not actually that funny.
But that also does mean that we had to change our feed for the last time. I'm 99% sure of it. So, again, it's on the main website. You can click on the iTunes link. You can click on the contacts link. There's nice, pretty pictures of iTunes CDs. You can download it straight off the website. There's a new RSS. It's all there. Warcastonline.com.
Yep.
That's everything.
That's it.
That's it.
All you got to know.
Just got to go
but
there.
We're everywhere else as
but,
well.
But if you are, like, I mean, a lot of people were saying the new feed isn't working. So, if you're listening to this on the website or... you're listening to this on the old feed, because we'll update that just so you guys get this message. Just chuck it over. It'll take you 5 seconds and then, you know, leave us a 5-star review, because that's what you do.
That's what you do. That's what cool people who play War Machine do.
Just update it. Just update your feed.
Update your feed.
Okay. So, we've got to kick off the episode again. As always, for the third fortnight in a row, Irresistible Force back on board. Love Irresistible Force. Yeah. Actually, speaking of which... Gavin, the owner of the shop up in Brisbane, has just started his car door blog on the Ranking HQ forums, which is also where our forums is.
For
someone who's won a lot of prizes, it's a pretty... He's done a juggernaut up in... he's going for a theme, fire and ice, and it's pretty phenomenal. It's good stuff.
It's amazing work.
All the awards he's won have definitely... definitely
honed his skills.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Check it out. It's on the forums. You can click on our forums or just go over to their modelling and painting section. So that's Irresistible Force, and the second week they're back. Battle Foam, hooray!
Yes,
I love Battle Foam.
And later on in the episode, we might be hearing more about them as well as Irresistible Force. But yes, Battle Foam.
They're sending us over some cool bags.
That'd be sweet. I'm excited. Finally have a battle foam bag. You know? I'm bored of only being able... not bored, sick of only being able to take a quarter of my Army 21 tournament. So I have to literally unpack like 50 infantry models and then pack another 50 infantry models.
That's good. And
I'm stoked. Having two bags so I can store one at home and have the tournament bag.
That's awesome. What I'm doing is just buying a bunch of trays to put on my shelf, and then I'll have my card or trays and my... excuse me, my Legion trays, and I can just swap them in and out of the bag in a couple of seconds. And
did we talk about that already? The fact that you're playing Cardor now?
Yeah, we mentioned it on the last episode.
Oh,
so
okay. Yeah.
We'll get there in the fortnight of gaming. Yeah. But we mentioned it, Cardor. Anyway, and I guess this is a sponsor, Dan Stuff.
One
of our listeners...
It's an important announcement.
Yeah, this is up there, definitely. So one of our listeners, Dan Pickler from Canberra here. He is a Crix player and also, well, now an ex-Legion player, because he is doing the mighty charitable thing of auctioning off his Legion army for charity.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So what it is, it's up on eBay. The links we've got on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Warcast.
And we'll put it up on Twitter shortly as well.
Sure. And what it is, he's got both the Liliths, a variety of heavy beasts... the Raptors, Shredders, Anissa, Shepherd, a few other things.
It's a straight up 50-point army, isn't it?
Nah, it's a bit more than that, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit more. So, and he's gone for this really sort of dark and ice look, which is pretty striking.
Black and blue.
It's pretty sweet. Yeah, it's like icy blue as well.
And he's a good painter too.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah.
But the interesting thing is he's just like... selling it, basically. And 80% of the profits are going to charity.
Yep.
I can't remember the charity off the top of my head.
It's Amnesty International and Médecins Sans Frontières, which is Doctors Without Borders. And 20% is coming to take...
to us.
So he's literally getting no profit out of this.
And he's just get like... That's a pretty amazing thing, just to sort of basically give an army away. He spent a couple of days painting up the last few bits just to make it a complete thing. So it's definitely worth... bidding. It's got 8 days left, so by the time this is up, probably 6 or 7 days.
Oh, yeah.
6 or 7 days left. So get on there and check it out. It's jumped up to $200 within the first day.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool, which means what? That's $40 for us, so it's $12 each.
Yes!
Coffee, yeah. Coffee's on me, man.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, like, just to give away your army, that's... And it's a very well-done army.
It's good, yeah. Dan's really, really good detail. Really original colour scheme. I like all of his colour schemes, actually. His Crix is very sort of... It's got the standard black, but he's gone with the golden orange kind of highlights and things like that. And
for the furnaces.
Mm. Yeah, for the furnaces and all that. And it's quite different from his standard sort of Crix colour scheme. And the Legion, they've all... even the Nis have like dark to black skin as well.
Yeah, he's very very good at kind of like that dark. He's a very dark painter, I think. He's very good with the blacks and the dark blues. My painting always ends up being quite gaudy and just like bright reds.
it's good, but it's very confronting. And his is very subtle. It really like one little element, like the skin or maybe their weapon or something, will stick out just enough to like really put like an accent on the model. Yeah. And they really,
makes it pop.
Basically, they're awesome. Go check it out.
Yeah.
It's going to charity. It's going to good cause. It's going to get us to blabber on the microphone a bit longer. So, bid.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's our big announcement. So let's kick it off. Fortnite in gaming.
Oh yeah.
We'll start with our trip up to Sydney.
Yep. Sydney Super Series.
So Aaron and I headed up to the Sydney Super Series, the second last heat of the event before the finals, along with Andrew, who you've heard in the last two episodes, and another Canberra and Russ. It was just a one-day event. We went up and down in a day, but leaving at 5:30 wasn't the greatest experience of my life. When you go to bed at 4:30... Yeah, 1 hour sleep, that was a tough day for both of us. We were struggling.
You did it to yourself.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
But got in the car, headed up there. I ended up taking P. Lilith, who I'm really trying out for my... I was in the fortunate position in that I've already qualified, so I get to try some stuff out. So I took P. Lilith.
Oh,
and
you tried out Saren. Yeah, just try her out.
Well, I'm trying to get my Saren list right, but she is a fantastic caster, like... She really covers the weaknesses of P. Lilith. So it was a good duo. What did you end up taking?
I ended up taking Iskar and Morten Abra, my two strongest casters at the time.
At the time?
Yeah.
Has that changed?
Well, I've actually decided that I don't really like Morten Abra in kind of like high tier tournaments because she's very weak at scenario and you're relying so much on that assassination run. And then if dice don't go the way you want them to,
yeah.
Then you can't really do anything about it.
Well, speaking of that, your first game.
Yeah. All right. So my first game against Epic Kaya.
And that was Mr. Ferris, not Evan. Ken. Ken
Ferris. P. Ferris.
Yeah. P. Ferris, Prime not Ferris. E. Ferris. E. Ferris wins every tournament he goes to. They need to nerf him.
So I was versing him, and I managed to get a Stalker into Kaya, turn 3, I think it was, after taking out his Gnarlhorn Satyr and the other one, the Shadowhorn,
yep.
Both with Deathjack. And then... he's not broken. Yeah, so anyways, I had 5 attacks against her... on 3 dice, needing I think it was 11s to hit because she had the guard, some sort of guard dog.
Plus
2 defense thing.
It's not dog pilot.
She's
not
a dog.
She's got Dep 16. She has plus 2.
Plus 2
I'm just trying
beast
to remember
or
what.
Something. No, Laris. Laris.
Laris. That's it.
Yep. So I was looking for 11s to hit. It wasn't the easiest thing to do.
But you had your feet up and terminal.
Yeah, feet and terminal. I hit with the charge. Managed to put her down to 2 life. Yep. And then missed my other 4 attacks.
Oh, 4 attacks.
So 11s yep. boosted with rerolls.
Yeah, boosted with.
You've got about a 75%
yep.
chance on those. Oh, maybe a bit less. About
so 68. She survived that. Pretty much had to spend most of her battle group that was remaining, which was a Pure Blood and a Feral Wartwolf as well as Laris, had to deal with that. But she managed to get the Feral into Deathjack and Nightmare and killed them both. from Full Health with the feral wolf.
They
that
can
thing
go
is
off,
vicious.
They, yeah, with,
those
with
things
the
are
Gorax's
vicious.
Animus and the strength buff. And they
yeah.
Can, yeah.
Then I managed to get a Helldiver into her the next turn, and I had four attacks, needing tens to hit because Laris wasn't there. Laris moved off to get the dog pile on Deathjack. So, needing tens to hit, again, missed all the attacks. Four attacks. Then the Helldiver got killed, and I ran Morty up and had two shots at Doom Spirals against her, needing 11s to hit, and they both missed. So, yeah.
Oh, dust.
Shane's raising the roof.
Put your hands up.
That was
unfortunate.
That was a little bit of unfortunate, but again, like, I needed above averages on all these rolls to hit, but I expected... The charge left her on 2 health. I mean, it nearly just outright got her. So, yeah. One roll, above average, the rest of it, not so much. Game 2...
Sound like you're trying to sell me something from, like, an Asian vendor.
Yeah,
not so much. Just before we go on, the format of the tournament was 4 rounds, 50 points. There were just under 20 players. I think it was 18. It's 50 points.
Only 2 slots, isn't it?
And well, with 18 players, 2 slots, meaning that after the day there would be 12 out of the final 16 decided, so 4 to go with 1 heat to go in Canberra. So we're kind of in the fortunate position that we've got all the straws to clutch at. So that was your game 1.
Yeah.
Game 2?
Game 2 took Iskar against, it was a Kaldor army. Oh, this was actually really funny.
Was that E-Butcher?
No, it was against E-Sorcerer. With Khazazi Assassins. Winterguard, Death Star, and Behemoth. Anyways, so what happens is I move up my Deathjack in front of the army, put Admonition on him, move everything up to kind of like countercharge anything that charges into him. Sorry, he got the first turn. He runs everything forward. And then I move my Deathjack up almost exactly 10 inches away from the Khazazi, so they just can't quite get behind him. Anyways, in his turn, he charges his... Khazazi unit into Deathjack. On about the 6th one in, I admonition backwards. So he's got this little semicircle of the Khazazi around where Deathjack used to be. He moves the rest of his, he's like, oh, okay, so didn't really know what to do then. Moves the rest of his kind of up behind that semicircle of 6. In my turn, I move Deathjack back up next to those 6 Khazazi. He had Iron Flesh on them, of course, so defense 18.
19 in combat, yeah.
And then I got Malice to slam Deathjack through the Khazazi. He went through the unit, killed 8 of them, and ended within 2 inches of all of them, and managed to get 8 souls.
Oh.
And he also ended up at the feet of Sorsha.
And just wailed on.
So then I was like, alright, I'll pop Scar's feet, targeting his Gorman, Deathjack, Behemoth, and my other Scar and Malice. he tries to run away, and then whirlwind away from Deathjack, but between... Perdition, a charge, and 8, 9, 10, 13 focus. She didn't stand a chance.
13 focus, Jesus.
Yeah, but East Guy as well, so she's a Caesar fate.
What was his reaction to, you know, he's got Death 19 models in there, so he's like, I'm untouchable. What was his reaction when you just killed him?
I don't think he was expecting it.
Okay, cool. Cool. Alright.
So he was kind of like, so I moved the Deathjack. I'm like, oh, I may as well have swings. And he was pretty cocky when it was like, miss, miss, miss. And I was like, oh, I'll use my last 2 to try a Perdition. Maybe I can get Malice to move into a slightly better position. Miss. And he's like, he looked a little bit relieved. And I'm like, all right, slam time.
Yeah. So that was that. Your third game was probably against, I don't know, some douche.
Yeah, I think his name was James Morehouse, actually.
Yeah,
I've heard about him. That was fun. That was, again, Mort Nebra versus
Saren. I've got to go Saren in that matchup.
P. Lilith has no chance against Mort Nebra, I don't think. Well, she does, but...
The scenario was capture flag.
Yep.
And... Well, we're talking about your games. What was your point of view of the games?
Well, really because of Saren's feat, it was trying to weather the storm and have enough left to go for an assassination run.
Yeah.
Because my entire Mort Nebra army is melee based, there's not much I can do about it. The early terms went well for me. Getting all my Satixis... I run Satixis with Mort Neighbor. It was the first time I've tried it, but they worked really well.
Yeah.
Just spread them out, engage as much as possible. So basically to tie you down and force your feet while I get all my heavies into position.
Tying down things like my Deathstalker as well, so I have to get a Shredder to free him up and to shoot others.
Shredder.
You sound like you're talking in Yiddish.
Shredder. I've been rolling my tongue for music today.
So tied you up fairly well. So you were pretty much forced to pop the feet before everything got engaged.
I popped the feet when I saw the Scythian had a decent shot at Deathjet, and I put the Breathstealer into him to give him minus two defense, meaning the Scythian needed fives to hit. And I charged the Scythian in there, and I did quite good damage from memory. I think I got him down to about five or six boxes because he just rolled. I don't think he missed a single attack. He might have missed one out of seven, including his free attack.
I'm pretty sure you were out of...
I'm 100% positive.
At one point, you were out of Saren's control range with one of your heavies, and you still managed to kill
him. Yeah, I think it was
later. Was that against Nightmare?
Yeah, that
you
was
killed
later
him
on.
In like three hits.
But the reason I did it there was because I saw the opportunity to get Deathjack. Once I got Deathjack down, it was really just Nightmare that was the only real threat other than the Stalkers that are always looming. Yeah. And that's why I popped it then, just to, you know, really put you put the pressure on early.
Yeah. In the end, it came down to I just had, I think, one Stalker and a Helldiver left, and Mort Neighbor and Daryllus.
And then what?
And then this is what happened. I misallocated focus and gave the first thing I did was loaded up my Stalker because I saw the assassination run on Saren. And then I was like,
I thought she was far enough away as well. I was keeping her so far back.
So I was like, all right, so I just have to give the Stalker Ghostly with Daryllus through Spectral Steel, which means... Because he was engaged with, like, two heavies or three heavies something.
Yeah.
And then he can just... with Ghostly, ignores the free strikes. Then I have to... I had popped my feet, but I still had Overrun and a... No, I had a War Witch as well that gave a focus to the Helldiver.
Mm.
And then with Terminal Velocity... overrun on the Helldiver, I could move in, kill a Shredder, and basically get a free 7-inch move around the heavies that were surrounding the Stalker, and then get a 12-inch charge into Saren. What ended up happening was when I cast Terminal Velocity, I realized I only had one focus on me instead of two, so I couldn't cast Overrun on the Helldiver. So, if I'd put two focus instead of three on that Stalker, I still would have had a fair chance of getting Saren. Misallocation. Like, when you get through a game, sometimes don't forget things
like
that.
Slip your
basically,
mind.
Don't do that.
And then Morty was just out there, and I just cast Breathstealer, shot her a few times, got the Angelus in her hit, and then it was game over. I felt like I played quite well in that game, actually.
Yeah.
I was pretty happy with that.
Apart from that last turn, I felt that I did the right thing as well.
It was a pretty tight game.
It was weathering the storm.
It was, travelling 2.5 hours at 5 a.m. on a... On a Saturday morning to verse each other isn't the greatest experience.
That's kind of like where my revelation with... the assassination run isn't something you really want to rely on in high-stakes games.
Yeah. Against players who know their stuff, assassinations are definitely late-game stuff. It's having a Stalker on each side of the board with the bloody 19.5 threat range that really puts pressure on them. And you have to be on your toes the whole game, just like against Ekane, or you can lose when they have no models left. So, and then your fourth game, just quickly?
Fourth game, again, Iskar versus... I don't even remember what I versed. It's Epic Scar that I won.
Alright. Well, that was your turn. How'd it go overall? Were you happy?
I felt a little... I felt I'd let myself down a bit with Mort Neighbor.
It was tough that we had to verse each other as well. That was a difficult position to be put in.
No, so I'm testing out a couple new casters, P. Denny, Terminus, to see who might go better for the last Super Series for me.
Yeah, cool. Well, just quickly, I, as you know, took P. Lilith and Saren. First game, I got matched up against a guy called Nathan Frawley, who was running E. Haley and E. Nemo. So I said, I'll take Lilith for this one. And he took Haley. And he actually surprised... He won the roll-off because he had Anastasia, so he's got a 2-in-3 chance to win it. But he gave me the first turn, which I was a bit surprised by. So I legged it up there. He shot me and did a lot of damage and feated. I then backed off because I was out of threat range of everything and I knew what I was doing against that kind of stuff. So so I just healed up Typhon, who'd been shot a lot. Then this is where weird stuff started to happen. He advanced and shot me some more, and the Black 13th and Iris in two turns managed to take out all five of my raptors. Just he admits he was rolling nuts. He was like, the Black 13th would roll 4, 5, 6 for damage, 5, 5, 6 for damage on brutal shots if they were in range, and then snipe shots were doing like 5, 5, so they were killing them.
But yeah, against raptors they don't need that much, do they?
No,
they
sixes need, to like, hit, and then, but like
10 on 3 dice, I think, because they're almost,
yeah, but
15,
but for the, yeah, 16. correct 15,
no 15, yeah, so 10 on 3 dice.
But you're right. Anyway, so they were just falling to bits, but I knew that side was going down anyway. So this was the turn. I feated and I advanced and I shot, and Lilith missed both her shots on 4 dice. So I was like, right, okay. The Seraph got 2 shots, boosted into Black 13th, needing 10 on 4 dice, missed. Boosted into Iris, needing 11 on 4 dice, missed. I was like, really? Okay. Anissa advanced, tried to shoot a Gun Mage, which was her prey, rolled triple one, because I was in... the feet. I was like, right. Typhon charged in, sprayed a couple of times into some guys that were close.
Managed to clip his car.
Managed to clip Haley, yep. And I hit her, and then I rolled 1, 2 for damage. So I did, and she was camping 1, so I did 2 points of damage. Got her again. I rolled 1, 3. I was like, right. Missed the third spray. And was like, right, okay. Got punished for it. Couldn't take out Thorn. Anyway, so he counter punches and kills a lot of stuff. But Haley, it was kill box, so Haley was actually still in the box, so I had a chance to pop her off. She only had about half her boxes left or something. Oh, no, she had about 2/3. Anyway, Lilith, 2 Seraphs and a Deathstalker were in range, so I went for it. Lilith goes up, shoots her twice, misses twice, again, needing 9s. On 3 dice this time instead of 4. Seraph 1 goes up. Gets 4 shots, hits one of them and does 2 damage, and the other one missed all the shots. So I was just like, huh, there you go. Nathan was a champ about it though. He felt pretty bad, but you know, that's dust. If I hadn't already qualified, I would have been spewing. I would have been absolutely spewing, because round 2 I played Dave Kissy with his Gators Barnabas. I took Saren in Process of Elimination. Dave deployed his army off to one side, so I took advantage of that, blocked him off from one of the zones, got an early point, the second point just by sacrificing stuff and throwing it at him. Third game I played you, and then fourth game I played, who did I play? No, I can't remember.
I remember what my fourth game is now. It was against Dwarves.
Yeah.
And the scenario was the one with the circle in the middle and the cast has to sit on the flag.
Yeah, command and control.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Gorton's feet. At first, I was like, wow, that's really good for this scenario.
I just had this image in my mind of like massive gnome hairy feet.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, whoa.
I was like, well, you just push everything out of the circle and then, you have to be standing on the flag that's 10 inches away from the circle. So,
if you want
a control point, you have to be both in the circle and not in the circle. So, unless you have 2 Gordons.
It's tough scenario.
Yeah,
man.
Not really good for him. He had masses and masses of infantry, so Deathjack was loving it. I think I once again slammed him kind of like into the middle of his army, and then he just dealt damage, and then I just ate everything and healed it, and then... Yeah, I'm pretty sure Deathjack killed in that game probably about 10... 10 of the knights, the precursor knights, about 5 or 6 Nis hunters, about 4 of the gun mages, and I can't remember what the other unit he had, the high shields.
Yeah.
And yeah, killed some of them too. He was a 4-star syndicate with Gorton. As the caster.
Yeah. It's a tough scenario as well, especially for a 5 fury caster who can't, focus caster who can't do both.
And I won that on scenario because I killed everything except for Gorton.
That's ridiculous. I played, Dan Pickler, who's auctioning his army, against Creeks, against Epic Lich Lord. And that was fun because Saren just went to town in all 3 of our games. Just shove beasts in their face, kill stuff, feet, and then you can't do anything. I finish off. Like,
actually, the funniest thing I did in that last game was I moved Malice up. I punched his the jack that was marshaled to Thor.
Yeah.
Possessed him, moved up, and killed Thor with it.
And they hate seeing Thor go down as well. Just briefly, while I've got the page open, did you know that Warwitch Siren power booster is to jacks that don't have any points on them?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
So she can't focus boost a Seether.
Or Deathjack.
No. Anyway, so that was the Oz Super Series Heat 7. It wasn't a great round for the Canberrans. We all got pummeled in our first round, and it was all a very similar story of dice and... Yeah. Dice. It's part of the game, but when it screws you that bad.
Honestly, like, Dice in the Canberra region have been rolling overall terribly. I can tell you that.
Just volatile, man. Just like when you don't need it as well. Yeah. Anyway,
funny story. Not War Machine related, but just dice related. Been playing a little bit of Magic of the Gathering cards, magical cards, recently, and for the new set, went to the pre-release thing, and between four rounds, just dice off to see who goes first. On two dice, in the four rounds, I rolled 1-1, 1-2, 2-2, 1-1.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm glad I'm not playing War Machine right now.
true. I just laughed into the microphone then as well. Good, well done. Look away from the mic to breathe in. So that was that. That was Oz Super Series. We drove home and almost micro slept into like 15 kangaroos. And that was a long, long day. We had like a funny discussion about Karchev and his little Disney themed posse of Wishnailer, War Dog, Reinhold. Who else was in there?
The Boker, the Ogre.
An unlikely group of friends set out on a journey to like and end up discovering they have more in common than they thought.
It was like Milo and Otis, but with less animal abuse.
Or just enough.
I just love the imagery of like an elf, a goblin, a dog, a dude with a massive shield. All just being like, hey, dude, robot man, can you like... have another shot and like I'll cast a spell for you and yay, we're friends.
It's like, it's like some Japanese anime, isn't it?
It literally is. So anyway, that
just
was
need
that.
A little kid to go with them.
Yeah. Who's like all powerful
and some tentacles.
Yeah.
he's just like a powerless kid, but he's got his giant robot friend who protects him. It's like
true. So that
like
was
Astro Boy
the
reverse.
Oz Super Series. Let's move on. I played in a local... Just I'm going to mention it briefly. I played in a little local tournament called... inspired from JamesCon. ChadCon, run by no other than Chad. And it was a little escalation tournament. It was just a local thing.
AKA ChopCon.
ChopCon, because he had muttons on it at the time. Yeah. But it was just a little thing. Didn't get many players because we didn't rev it up much. But the format was interesting. I just want to touch on briefly. It was an escalation tournament. And 15, four rounds. First round was 15, second 25, 35, and 50 points. And so you had to add... You basically had to expand on every list. If you had a min list, you could make it maximum, but you obviously couldn't make it. You couldn't go from a maximum to minimum. Basically, you had to add stuff on. You couldn't take stuff away. And so I thought, I'll whip out the card or because it's a good chance to learn them. And it was actually very good learning one or two models at a time, or more. Mm-hmm. So I took Esau Shur and I took the Winter Guard, Death Star, and Beast. Yeah. And then I learnt that... Well, I haven't played... Yeah, they're amazing. But if Jack's bonded, they can have one extra focus, so you can allocate up to four. And an affinity can overwrite... the character things for a bond.
Yeah.
So Beast is awesome. Added in a few things, got to play with Iris and Gorman, felt like a dirty, dirty, dirty girl. Those guys, wow, Gorman. I just don't understand how Cardor players lose with Winterguard and Gorman and Iris.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it was a good learning experience, just adding on a bit at a time. I really encourage, if you're new, don't be intimidated by 50 points. Give it a shot. It was a really good way to learn bits at a time. One of the newer players said it was the best tournament he's played in.
Yeah, when I first started running tournaments, my first tournament was a charity tournament for Movember that was an escalation. It was a three-round escalation because the majority of the players that were coming to that were extremely new. There was a player that played his second, third, and fourth games at that, and they really enjoyed it because of that exact reason. Yeah. You've got that, so those levels of escalation.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Do you want to talk about the league briefly?
Yeah, that'd be great.
I will give you a chance to talk.
Thanks.
Just sitting there being like, well, we were being nerds, you're DJing at DEF CON.
Yeah. That's true. We were in the same city, actually. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't being a nerd at ChadCon. I was...
No.
At the Hangover.
That was a Super Series.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, the league's going really well. We hit the halfway mark yesterday. That was session 6 out of 11. We've got 4 more sessions of standard play and then the finale event after that. So, 5 sessions to go. The Legion players came in early, smashed everything up, and possessed 4 out of 7 territories in the map, and they've actually just
lost
1.
We had 5.
Did you get up to 5?
We got up to 5, right?
Yeah. And yeah, basically, we've been losing regions just because people are starting to refuse to play them. Not because we're actually losing the game.
Well, I went to the coast for a couple of days and played some Cardor, so I missed 4 rounds in a row. Yeah. So that wasn't good. I dropped down to like 10th or something.
Yeah.
Aaron has been refused to play against by the guys that have 10 Stormstrider lists and all that kind of stuff.
And Andrew Hayden. Yeah, just going to put your name out there as somebody who won't take a challenge.
It's funny as well. It's funny as well because it's divided up our Canberra, where we live, into regions. And the most commonly contested zone is a zone in sort of southern Canberra by the name of Tuggeranong. And the further south you go in Canberra, the baggier chicks' pants get and... You know, the easier they get in, they are to get into. So,
yeah.
So it's kind of funny.
But because the Legion participation has dropped off a little bit recently for several reasons, the other factions have started regaining a bit of ground. I mean, Legion's been knocked back to 3 territories now. Scorn, who has only 1 player, which is Andrew Hayden, who's apparently refusing challenges.
He's won every game he's played because he refuses to challenge. Because
he doesn't want to burst false. Also, shout out to Mr. Jake Mendel, the solo troll player in the league, who is controlling his own.
His zone is now contested.
Now contested.
He's gone to every night, I think. And he's booked out Jarl and. He's only new. He only started playing about a month ago.
He's doing really
well. Well done.
He took a territory off the mercenaries by playing a mercenary player 3 times. Three times.
The funny thing was, it was the mercenary player who challenged him.
Yes, and had the choice of location as well.
I think he's got. I think he's in love with Mulg. He's got Mulg action happening.
Yeah,
again.
All the time. Yeah,
Mulg is the man.
Yeah, Crix have come back from nothing to very something. They've got 1 territory and they're threatening a couple of others at the same time. Which is it's good to see a bit of diversity coming into it.
It's good.
It's interesting to see the sort of division between levels of players and stuff like that. I'm sort of. Thinking of ways to try and even that out with some kind of
in a sense
some sort of like randomizing mechanic like dice or something.
If only we could.
If there was something that could randomly generate.
There's one thing that's sort of inherent in that the more games you play, the more points you get.
Yeah,
I've won all my games, but I've only played 5 or 6, so I'm slipping down now. As opposed to guys who have been there every night are pretty much up there. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. Just what I remember as well. This is pretty funny for our international listeners or even listeners from the other states. There was a fire in Canberra, and by fire I mean a chemical plant exploded, and there was an exclusion zone for a couple of days around it, and schools were shut down. Which is pretty exciting. Yeah. Anyway, that was big.
They loved it. My windows were rattling, though.
But we're updating the weather based on what that weather has actually been like in Canberra, and so that place was obviously toxic cloud, and it was the original rules for it were continuous effects are only shaken on a roll of one instead of one or two.
Yeah.
Some guys thought, correct me if I'm wrong, that every model in their army at the start of turn two...
Round two,
had continuous corrosion on them.
Yeah.
And so
and
all
they,
the infantry
and they
just
only shook it on once.
And all the infantry just disappears off the board.
Oh, but they said they were rolling dice all the time, and they said it was one of the most fun games that they've played in a long time.
That's awesome.
So I included as an official variation for the next
an
nine.
Official variation.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It's going well. Participation is a little bit down at this point because I think it's just been because people got so excited early on and they've kind of peaked. And
well, we had a night with like 24 players.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
Like
22, I think.
In a room that can that should probably only have about should probably realistically only have about 16 players.
Yeah,
tops. Well done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good stuff.
It's good. It's keeping interest going. It's quite a long tournament as well. Oh, sorry, a league as well. A really long tournament. It's a long league running at 5 weeks.
It's a nice time frame. You've just got to keep momentum and enthusiasm.
Yeah,
and I think you will. I mean, last night was the quietest I've seen it, and that was still like 12 players or something.
Yeah, and it's still, well, I think it was about 10. Something like that. Anyway, the enthusiasm is still there. I think it's just... that particular night tends to go in cycles of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And some players only come on 1 week or the other week, and so they're sort of settling back into their old routine after a sort of burst of excitement for the beginning of the league. But they'll be back.
One of the things I've noticed as well is that some of the players that came out of the woodworks for the tournament that I ran have sort of disappeared again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to mention, I won't actually mention any names, but because I mean it doesn't really matter. But but it would be just good to see them again. Like, you know, if it takes, like I plugged the out of my event.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it takes that much just to get them out of the house, like, come on, get involved, get involved. One of the guys came second at the tournament. You want a mad prize, so
yeah,
get there.
If nothing else, come to the big events. I mean, there's a lot happening in Canberra at the moment.
Yeah. I'm pumped for CanCon. CanCon's got 60 to 80 players.
Oh, yeah, Canberra! Yeah. Everybody come to CanCon.
Everybody is coming to CanCon.
Even
it's
outside of Canberra.
Event.
It's gonna be immense.
If we can get some overseas people, you know, we'll show you a good. Canberra time.
And potentially 1 week after that is TempleCon, but we're getting distracted. Anyway, just briefly before we move on from our super long fortnight in gaming, Moab is this weekend, Mother of All Battles. It's a big convention in Sydney that Aaron and I are heading up to with Andrew Hayden and a guy called Dale, who looks like he should be a bouncer.
And Dan Pickler as well.
And Dan as well. I'm heading up on Friday. You guys have to do the one day Saturday thing again.
Yep.
And then coming back for my girlfriend's party.
Yeah.
So,
intense.
So yeah, that was good. And you had a party the other weekend.
Yeah, that was
my girlfriend met the nerd crew.
Yeah.
That was good. It was good.
It wasn't just the nerd crew. So.
And I'm missing out on Moab for yet another DJ gig. It's getting ridiculous. It's like, come
such
on, guys.
A not nerd.
I know.
Some of the chicks that like you've met through DJing, though, are just like goddesses. Like,
anyway, it's driving me mental. I'm seeing you guys going off to all these awesome tournaments. I'm like, yeah, I can. I so have to be in Canberra that weekend. Exactly. It's killing me.
So just briefly, Moab is a 32 player steamroller, 50 points, 2 list tournament. I think it's 5 rounds. Yeah, it is. Well, it is. It's 32 players.
32 players, yeah.
I am 90% sure I'm going to take the same casters again, just because P. Lilith really didn't get much of a run when I took her to the Super Series, the Sydney Heat. I really like her. I think she deserves another one. And it's a 32 player tournament, which means it's actually worth a lot of points. And theoretically, if I win it, I'll be ranked number one in Australia.
And I actually
I think I'm going to whip out Saren again and go from there.
And just try
I actually
win.
Need to grab myself a fair few points to jump Drew Moore and be second in Canberra. Drew, can you please tell me how you managed to get above me?
We haven't seen him in months. Since Convict down in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I'm looking forward to that. It's the second day is a team event, which I would love to do, but I've just got too much on.
Yeah.
And we're all just going to car back together and It would be mad to have a big Saturday night, but next time when Shane's involved, we'll be then. Oh, yeah. Let's move on to the next segment, Ask Warcast.
Woo!
All right. Let's go.
So there's a couple of good questions. I'll save the best one for last. I'll kick off with Obeisance on the forums and on Vassal. His name is Judas/Jason Peach Robinson, and his question is, what are your Bethane list building tips? I don't know much about Legion. Feel free to gush about one of your favourite Warlocks, James. And Aaron.
Yeah,
Aaron,
definitely
one of your favourite.
Yeah, so Bethane
was my
number one favourite Legion Warlock. I'm not that taken with Legion at the moment, but she plays a lot like a Krix caster, and she is amazing.
It's like he's discovered Iskar and Deathjack, and he's just hooked on drugs.
Yeah.
This is all coming back.
Deathjack, man.
A very versatile caster, very good caster. For those of you who don't know, she's similar. Well, I don't think she's similar to any caster. If you had to draw an analogy, probably Old Witch and Scrapjack, but she has her own light jack that she can channel through, and she can also get inside it. So she's a very fragile caster, 16-12 with 14 boxes. But if she gets inside her little light jack, who has an amazing Belphegor. Animus as well, Belphegor, she's 12-19. You chuck tenacity.
19 on a warlock.
And well, that too. And you chuck
when
tenacity.
When you can do transfers and your armor's 19.
Yeah,
it's just,
and you're immune to...
And she's immune to every effect in the game. So that's one of the key things about it, that
and then
pet
chuck,
is immune to every
what's
effect.
What's it called? Tenacity on her?
Yeah, 13-20. That's what I was going to say. But immune to every effect means people like Nemo or lightning-based or anything with like corrosion, lightning, cold, and
fire.
They're all going to really struggle. So
the other one
she's
as
a
well
very versatile
is,
caster.
I mean, she can sit really far back and just be very safe.
Yep.
But if somebody manages to somehow scatter like a fire AoE on her, set her on fire, you just jump inside Belphegor, it's gone, and then jump back out.
True. You've got to get your order right. As soon as she steps into Belphegor, Belphegor can't activate.
Yes, so you activate Belphegor.
So Belphegor first every time. And Belphegor's Animus Despoiler, place a 5-inch template on him, who is a medium jack, so only a few reach models will get to you. If you enter the AoE, you take a point of damage, so infantry can't touch her, which is pretty awesome. So, very versatile. Her spell list is fantastic.
Was it Russell Harmon said...
Evlad's feet on a full unit of assassins or something that are deaf... 22 and PS blah 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 blah.
I dare any warcaster
to come near that, and you're just like it's like Belphegor Bethane in Belphegor troll face.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
No, it's Bethane with Belphegor's Animus.
Yeah,
not actually in Belphegor because
that too. Yeah,
that way she can't cast the Animus because remember that you lose Bethane to, Belphegor's Animus if you combine them.
Yeah,
so just be careful not to do that.
And on a small base, reach models can't hit you either.
Yeah,
so infantry
unless
in trouble.
Just don't remember that one wound models can't hit you, not heavy jacks. They can take 1 point of damage and go to town.
And he's not too bad in combat either. He's pretty slow, he's speed 5, but he's just so durable and versatile. A fantastic caster. She's got a couple of really good spells, and her feat is everybody in her control of 14 gets boosted magic attack and magic rolls and magic attack rolls and magic attack damage rolls.
Yeah.
And the beasties get the animus for free. This is incredible. That's
phenomenal.
Because the main thing is one of her spells is Eruption of Spines. So she arcs it out of Belphegor. You can hit your own guy with low defense if you want.
But it's boosted anyway.
So you at Fury 7, you're pretty good. It then jumps to the nearest D6 models within 5 inches. It's power 10 plus 3d6 on all of them because they're all boosted. It just goes ballistic. It just ends infantry.
But there's just so much in Legion that can take advantage of a feat as well. You've got the Hex Hunters,
the
Hellions. Oh my god, the Hellions.
The Black Frost Shard as well.
Yeah.
But it's things like the Hex Hunters. When you combine them with Carnival, so they're effective mat 9, they can charge in, kill something. And then they've got Battle Wizards, so they're shooting out Magic Ability 6 plus 3d6, and then Power 13 plus 3d6. You can stop them from using special attacks. And also, when you combine it with Kiss of Lilith, they're shooting boosted Power 15s. They can wreck a jack with a couple of them.
You can wreck a card or heavy quite easily with the unit of Hex Hunters.
Especially with Harm. The Hellions are so versatile. She's got Carnivore, she's got Eruption of Spines, those are the main ones. She's
let's talk about the thing with the Hellions with their light cav movement, the Storm Ravager and Gun Mages.
Gun Mages, I was talking about that. Well, just, it's, they're a 4-point solo, which is, they become 3 points in the tier, but they are 14-16 defensive stats. They're no good in combat. But they're speed 8 with 10 boxes, so they're actually quite tanky.
Yeah.
They got three abilities. One and is they place a 5 inch AoE within their command of 8 or 9, and then if you hit something, it takes a point of damage. So shield wall things and
so they get that kind of stuff. What's that called? That's precision strike.
Basically. Effectively. Yeah.
They can. She can also give. She can also give corrosion to Strider's bows, which is pretty cool. So she's got that. She's got a range, a spray 8, power 12, magic ability 7 spray, which is always good when it's all boosted from her.
And
feet.
I think it's got crit freeze as well.
No, not that one. No. And but the other one. This is a good one. So Storm Ravager, I think it's called.
That's my favourite.
Models within her command, which is... It's either 8 or 9. I'm pretty sure it's 8. Yeah. Can't make range shots. Yep. So she advances 8, uses that, and she's a cav model as well, so they can light cav 5 inches. So 13 inches. Gun mages can't... If you do that in your gun mages, they're a joke in combat. So they've got to walk away from you to shoot you.
Yep.
And even then they...
if they walk, they're probably not going to get out of the 8 inches.
Yeah, well, they're not going to, and they need to be pretty... Like, it just wrecks them.
You've only got the diameter to worry about, so you've got 4 inches, so they can walk out.
No, it's within 8 inches, the 8-inch diameter.
Oh, my God. Yeah, radius. Yeah, of course. Why was I thinking... Oh, total derp moment there.
It's 8-inch radius, so
that's ridiculous.
And what I've done against gun mages is put them so that... The gun mages, if they want to advance towards a Hellion, they're not going to be able to shoot, and they're not going to... They have to walk away from their army into the corner of the board to take crappy shots at a 3-point model, because I'm playing tier.
The best thing about it is she's got reach, so within 2 inches, all those gun mages there are engaging. So even the ones on the outskirts who can just manage to get out are going to be taking shots at a defense 18 model.
As well. Yeah.
Unless, the guys on the inside.
And the good thing is, you can still magic into combat. Yep. So she's like,
so she can
what a
through the middle.
Yeah, yep. People really don't rate the Hellion, and I don't get it. She is incredible under.
I can imagine that
you can't do both in the same turn.
Yeah,
because they're both special action.
Or an action.
I can see that at 4 points, there's probably better things. But when you're getting them for 3 points,
don't forget their effect on flying models as well, which allows them to charge
for
free.
True. Yeah. So Angelus and Seraph can charge for free,
and that's 1-me game.
Oh, that's why I'm running an Angelus with her.
Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out the last few points. Anyway, so an incredibly versatile caster. I know we've gone on a bit about it, but we have to touch on this. Her tier list is incredible. I'm running it at the moment. I can't remember the exact details off the top of my head, but you have to have at least 2 magic ability
units.
Models or units. So Hex Hunters
and
with Bale
at the moment. Yeah.
With Bale, who goes nuts as well. Bale's incredible. And the Black Frost Shard. You've got to have a couple of heavies. You've got to have 2 Hellions, I think, and at least 2 Hellions, and then they become FAU and 3 points.
And 3 lights, is it?
Shane's got it
right here. The requirements are the army tier 1 is just including the above models, which is the
magic users, basically.
Non-character Legion War Beasts, so you can't take Typhon.
So beasts, magic users.
Yeah, spawning vessel Legion units with magic ability, so spawning vessels in there as well, which is pretty good. The Forsaken, Incubi, Spell Martyrs, Legion Soldiers.
Spell Martyrs.
Yeah, so basically anything magic related is in there. Tier 2.
Which is what you want for her feet.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Tier 2 is the army includes 2 or more Blighted, Nissed, Sorceress, and Hellions. So you need to take 2.
So we've just been over that, yeah.
Yeah. Tier 3 is the army includes 2 or more units.
Yeah, so that's at least a unit of Hex Hunters or 2 and a Black Frost Shard.
And Bethane's Battle Group includes 2 or more Heavy War Beasts, which you're going to take anyway.
Which I've been running a Scythian, Angelus, and a Seraph. I'm not sold on the Angelus, but the Scythian and the Seraph always.
Yeah.
But the benefits are incredible as well. Cheaper Hellion, your beast get +2 speed on the first turn. That is nuts. You get to redeploy a model or a unit for each Hellion.
For each
Hellion,
get two good.
And you're taking at least two in the tier, so you get two redeployments if you want.
But the thing is, like, even if you deploy your heavies all very centrally, the ability to redeploy your Hex Hunters, your entire Hex Hunter unit, after you've seen how your opponent's deploying, is just.
And the Black Frost Shard as well, they're very...
Yeah, they need to be in the right spot.
Situational as well.
Yeah.
And... plus two speed for your beast. You can leg it. Your Angelus can go 18 inches first turn. Your other beasties can go heaps fast.
Yep.
And also, your enemies' spells cost one more. And against War Machine, where they can be quite starved, they're not going to get all their upkeeps if they want. Everything might not be able to run. You really put the pressure on early.
Just on the note of the redeploys again, another really strong model to redeploy is Belphegor himself, just because of that animus. You put him across the board from infantry. He's not the most mobile of models. He's only
And he doesn't have Pathfinder. He's not as mobile because he doesn't have Pathfinder.
Yeah, he's not very mobile. So the ability to redeploy him where he's going to be the most useful is, phenomenal.
Yeah. One other thing with Beethane, this is pretty cool. When Beethane is in Belphegor, is a war beast and can make power attacks.
Yeah,
so he can do this thing called the Slip Slam, which is what it is. You cast Slipstream on yourself. You charge a model or your own model. When you finish your movement, you can then Slipstream the model so that you can put it in a certain direction around...
Slam him.
You can put him in a spot so that he ends up on the right angle, if you're in his rear, that he is in your 180-degree arc to the front.
Yeah, because remember...
You can even slip him further, and you can slam him on any direction you want, basically.
Something I found a lot of people around Canberra have been getting wrong... slams are direct center to center of model.
That one little model off to the side can ruin your day.
Yeah, you have to be... Slams are probably the hardest power attack to line up. And that's what I had to do with when I slammed my Deathjack through the Windyguard infantry. I had to make sure that with admonition, I moved him back on the right angle.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even touched on Ashenvale, which is incredible. But that's the one other thing I want to talk about is... she can have bad matchups. I think her most notable is Crix, because she's got Carnivore is plus two mat against the living and heals Beethane if they kill something.
Depends who's playing the Crix.
As well as...
I use almost always all living models anyways. Yeah, I use so much Satixis.
Or Witches.
Yeah.
But I mean, still, you got Bane.
Yeah. It's more limited, but still a thing.
It's not as good against Jax as well, because I find Carnivore on a Beastie can be really good against another Beast just for ensuring that you're hitting... needing fours instead of sixes.
I mean, there's some casters, like Terminus, who she's got no chance against.
I wouldn't say no chance, but, I mean, she's even got Gallows. We didn't even talk about Gallows. Gallows is incredible when you can... with Spell Martyrs when you're arcing it out.
Actually, no, you're right, because the Hex Hunter's little attack is a magic attack, so you can't sacrificial pawn it.
No.
Yeah.
So it's not a range attack, it's a magic attack, yeah.
Gallows is incredible, especially through Spell Martyrs, where you can set up your correct angles, and he's an Arknode, and they're boosted Power 13s as well if you hit, which will really hurt a caster if you can do it twice.
Yep.
Ashenvale as well, which is basically a flat minus two to hit overall, roughly. Only against living, though. So against Menoth, she has a lot of magic attacks that they can deny, and Creeks, they have a lot of undead stuff that is... better. She's not bad against them, but they are her weaker matchups. Yeah, her weaker matchups. Anyway, I've a really good caster. I can't praise her enough. She's my other choice for this weekend as well.
Yeah.
But Lilith needs a run. Let's move on to... we've got two to go. John O'Crane, another Canberran guy, asks, what are your thoughts on the War Engine theme list? I'm assuming he means Battle Engines. not a fan, to be honest.
I think they fall into that themeless trap that a lot of themeless do, that you try and get all the right things in, and there's just not as much synergy as you'd have if you just took, say, one battle engine and the things you'd normally take. Yeah.
Mm.
Haley especially.
The one that's come out recently is the Haley one, which your Storm Striders start with power tokens or whatever that.
Yeah.
And it's no fun. No fun to play against. It's very unimaginative.
It's an effective theme, and it's basically giving you the opportunity to use your Storm Striders in a theme list, which might limit their use if you didn't have that kind of option, I think, as well.
But what is it? Tier 4, includes two Stormstriders. when you've got two Stormstriders in, especially with E-Haler, you're just taking out so much utility that you could be using to flood the board with infantry or something that really make use of her feet. Stormstriders, they're great models, and I wouldn't say don't have one with
E-Haley.
They're really
good models.
They're great models, and they're effective.
Having two of them, like, this is a lot of kind of like economics kind of stuff, but the marginal utility of your second Stormstrider is much lower than your first, because it's repeating the same job that the first is doing. And especially in this Storm list, the Storm list is already very good at dealing with infantry. Your second Stormstrider is, basically
that being
going
said,
to be useless.
You then have two massive bases that can cover up your Warcaster really effectively, and they take a concerted effort to kill. Because with the Stormstriders, I think when you hit them, they get knocked back, but not, so you're having a lot of difficulty actually killing these.
Yeah. We saw that Siege just pulls the teeth straight out of that army.
The other week
when Dale was versing it.
Yeah.
If you come up against that list, and your Signar as well, Siege just completely pulls the teeth out of it. His feet.
He's
puts them down to armor 9.
He's hitting them at dice plus 5, so he can do most of the damage in his first shot and take them out.
From a
concentrated effort from a second.
And that's pretty much you activate maybe
two, three
jacks, and you take out 18 points of models.
There's two sides to that piece of advice as well. If you're Signar and you're running Stormstriders, don't pull them out against Signar, because they're just not going to be effective.
The other thing is about battle engines, they're not draining on focus.
No.
Which is an interesting thing. For casters who are pretty star for focus, like P-Striker and they have good spells that they want, like Arcane Shield and Snipe and stuff, they're actually probably a good investment for him. But for someone like E. Haley, who's pretty much a 9 Fury caster when you focus, when you include the Squire, she does have the Fury to run some jacks and stuff. So
yeah, I still wouldn't run a lot because she is a spellcaster. I think she's under the same. She's in the same boat as.
But I'm just saying more so than P. Strike.
She's in the same boat as P. De Negra. Or Edenegger, for instance, who...
Did you just say Edenegger?
Edenegger.
Yes, that's exactly what I said. So Denegra is a 7 focus caster, and then you take 2 war witches with her, which power 2 jacks. And then she uses her 7 focus just to cast spells. I think Haley's in that same boat, where she's going to be using her 7 focus to cast spells, and then 2 to get Thorn up there, and then maybe chuck one on another Lancer, or power up Thunderhead, for instance, is very good with her.
Thunderhead and Stormclaw.
She's got an amazing Warjack bond, so yeah, sometimes you will want to load up a...
You can't bond a character there.
Oh, okay, yep. So, yeah, amazing Warjack bond, that's why you want the sword...
Stormclad.
So yeah, you can load him up with 4... just very good. And then, yeah, she's got to cast her telekinesis and temporal deceleration and all those other disgusting spells she has.
That's about it for her.
There you go.
Last question of Ask Warcast, and this is pretty interesting. So, I think everyone knows him by now, Adam Tremblay, the Canadian. He's got his own... he's got a lot of blogs, and he plays a lot of games. And he's written on our forums, warcastonline.com/forum. If you're a regular listener of Warcast, you might happen along a little segment called Ask Warcast. If you listen carefully, you'll notice, for some rather odd reason, my random musings of a question get answered every show. So in order to stay in the theme, I've created my own tribute to the show, Adam Ask the Warcast. So, pretty straightforward. So this week's question is, and it's once again a very good question.
It picks up the good questions, that's for sure.
It says, depending on how many Focus/Fury you have, how many Warjacks Warbeast should you use? Also, what kind of trends do you typically see within each faction that changes the degree of how many Warjacks Warbeast can be fielded? For example, Harkovich likes running lots of Warjacks, High Reclaimer does not. Very good question.
I think the... Not to call you out, Adam, but the first logic flaw
but
there...
You're wrong!
The first logic flaw there is it's not the Fury or Focus you look at as the first point of running Jax or Warbeast. That's pretty much the last thing you look at.
Yeah.
The first thing you want to look at is your spell list and your feats.
And the other first thing you want to look at is Focus and Fury are two very different mechanics.
So
let's talk about Focus.
Let's talk about Focus because Fury, we'll probably get onto it. Focus.
Well, obviously, with Focus, you gain your Focus at the start of each turn and allocate to a Jack. This is resource management.
Yep.
And you're going to be more often stretched for resources than you are in
Hordes. There's obviously some casters who really, really stand out in War Machine as Jack casters who can pretty much take however many Jacks they want, however many they can manage to field. You've got Morten Abra. Got E. Nemo, Amon, who wants a whole bunch of dervishes, from what I hear. Mm. I don't know how effectively he plays, though, because I haven't heard very good things about him. Not to say you shouldn't play him. If you're using Amon and he's working for you, please send in a list. I'd like to know how to make him work.
Even Cray
as well.
I was going to say Cray, and I was almost going to say Darius as well.
Darius?
Because his little half-jacks heal up jacks. I'd go as far as to say you pretty much want three jacks with Karchev. And this is basically all because of their spells.
Their
abilities. It almost don't quote me, but it almost has nothing to do with their focus stat.
If Morten Abra had like five focus,
it would be a different ball game.
But
she's not focused.
As long as they've all got just enough focus that they work well with their spell lists.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're built so they can run a lot of jacks. And I think there's just one for every faction, isn't there? Save Space Elves.
Yeah,
but they have that Hydra that can get focused through other ways and keep it over turns. And he's a good
Arcanist.
Yeah, he's the good way to.
They're slightly different, but they don't have a dedicated Jack caster. Now, the reason that these casters can run a lot of Jacks is because instead of by simply giving their beast lots of fury like you might in Hordes, they're for their Jacks, instead of loading them up on focus, they have spells that affect the battle group.
Yep.
So that's the main one. For example, Morty's Terminal Acceleration.
Terminal Velocity.
crazy good. Three charges for everyone, so if you've got five jacks, you already save two focus. And they're all getting boosted attack rolls against living.
Yep.
And they also get plus two to charge rolls. I mean, it's just crazy.
So let's just say,
value.
Five jacks there. Three charges.
Yeah.
Saving two focus.
Yeah.
Boosted attack rolls.
So they have
five free focus. Assuming they all only have one attack.
No, let's assume they have two. So that's
10 free focus.
So we've already got 15. We got 15 for the price of three.
Yep.
With 2-inch free charges as well.
Yep.
Which in some factions is a spell called Rush or Boundless Charge, which costs two. So let's just say, for the sake of it, one each. That's another five. So that's 20. You've basically got 20 focus for the price of three.
Yeah.
Yep.
The downside is that they only have two attacks. They probably won't be able to do a job by themselves. They'll probably need a bit of help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Morty has tricks. She has tricks to get that extra bit of focus out there. The first, and probably the most obvious, which is a big one for all cricks, is the War Witches. Casters who are running jacks in cricks, a lot of the time, if you're running a light jack like a Arc Node or that...
Gotcha.
I think a good investment is to get a War Witch for every one or two Arc Nodes. Depending on the caster. Like, some casters want to skew their Arc Nodes.
Mm.
Denny wants to be really aggressive and have them both up the board. And I think with both the Denegras, it's good to have two War Witches just so your Arc Nodes are very versatile while freeing up Denegra from having to do anything to do... she doesn't want to spend her focus at all on them.
That's not even counting jacks and things that generate focus.
Looking at some of the other casters, I'm going to pick on Kator here. Their main two would be P-Vlad, who gives his jacks double, so basically plus four speed and free charges. And Karchev, who has spell... Thingo Rage.
Unearthly Rage.
Unearthly Rage. I was going to say undesirable Rage.
Boosted attack and damage rolls. And again, that's getting you... With his three jacks, assuming they have two attacks each, that's 2, 4, 6, 12 free focus there. and then he normally has a few focus to give out, so yeah.
But considering you're getting boosted, well, his feat is free charges, it's not the greatest feat, but free charges and Pathfinder, and face any direction you want, yeah, as well as three focus for fully boosted attack and damage rolls on everyone. People like Beast who have Thresher,
yeah, he
instead
just
of
goes
individually
off.
Boosting, so boost hit and boost damage one each, and he's, let's just say he gets lucky and hits eight guys in his Thresher, that's 16 for the price of three, and you're also affecting all the other jacks.
How many
it's
was
just,
it? How many trolls I hit with my Harrower's Thresher?
Yeah, game I had the six Burrowers and six Fenblades kill
them. 12 guys.
Yeah, it was 12 guys because they just made little semicircles around the death jack. To which the Harrower said, mine, and the little Jeff Hag dude was there.
So our Death Jack was dead, yeah. That was an interesting,
that was interesting
one attack.
But moral of the story is battle group spells that give you real mileage.
Yeah.
Hordes is different in that your caster is going to cast spells or animi or heal or whatever,
yeah,
and they're going to do that every turn. They're not going to be able to... They don't feed two of your jacks and say, oh, I have no fury, I'm going to go hide behind a hill.
Yeah. The big thing about hordes, I think, is you have to weigh up how many you can take as in how many you can make a threat during the impact turn.
Yep. And the other big thing is fury management as well. There are a lot of ways. Shepherds, Forsaken, Scorn Handlers, Whelps, Stones.
Yep.
All that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a set rule in hordes of how many beasts. I mean, Elilith would love to take 20 Ravenclaws.
I mean, yeah, exactly. But you also look at the fact that the half your spell list is built off your beast's animi as well.
Yeah.
That's another aspect.
Hordes runs the heavy, heavy lists much better.
Yeah. Obviously, casters like Epic Doomshaper who give beasties free charges and plus 3 inches. Yeah,
Thagrush Puppy Swarm.
Thagrush Puppy Swarm. Legion in general.
Legion in general. It's always beasts and Legion. Like, I think my Lilith army is beasts and solos only. Like, you know, it's very rare that you
There's there's only a few units, and they're, that's a whole nother topic.
Like Raptors.
Yeah.
But there are so many ways to manage Fury that a 5 Fury caster can run a lot of lot of beasts if they want.
Yep.
I know that when
because you're risk managing as well, you can just make the decision to leave a beast on full fury and not care about it anymore.
Yeah.
And because you'll still get an attack out of it if you positioned it correctly.
And you can sacrifice. You can sort of say, I'm going to get full mileage out of them, and if they live through it and don't frenzy, it's a bonus.
Yeah.
I mean, in the early turns of my games with Legion, where my Seraph is slipstreaming and shooting and my Ravagors are shooting, you can get full, you can boost all their blasts, and then a Shepherd just says, chill out.
Yeah.
And it's all good. Like, they're two very different things. It's a very thought-provoking question we could probably talk about forever, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I hope that gives you a brief sort of intro. Next up, we have my little interview with Beth.
You're
from Western Australia, who was a lovely girl with a really interesting tournament. So, we'll get you guys to listen to that now, and then I think we'll take a break after that, and then we'll come back with our model spotlight and discussion.
Exactly.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, Lich 1?
I think I am, Lich 2.
These Battlefoam cases look perfect for my legions of darkness. The finely cut foam trays are just like little graves to cradle my dark abominations and protect them from damage in transport across the broken coast. Do you need to transport your army to the battlefield? There's no better transport system than Battlefoam cases, so check them out at www.battlefoam.com for all your army transport needs. In the Scorn Empire, they say Moloch Khan. In Kador, Winterguard Death Star. The Nightmare Empire says Deathjack. Here at Warcast, we say Irresistible Force. Wherever you're from, sometimes you just need a powerhouse to drive you to victory. For all your War Machine and Hordes needs, check out www.irresistibleforce.com.au.
Hello again. This is Norbert Brunhuber from the NJSOBs, and I'm excited that it's time for Food Machine again. Food Machine is a very successful canned food drive that War Machine and Hordes players have been putting on for 6 years now. Just last year, we had over 27,000 cans donated by 18 different stores holding Food Machine tournaments. We even had events going on in Wales and South Africa. The best part of a Food Machine tournament is that you get to cheat to win. By donating cans, you can buy cheats to improve your mediocre skills. anyone can organize a Food Machine event, and we've created a packet of information that has all the cheats that you can buy. And if you are more of a painter rather than a dirty cheater, there's something in Food Machine this year for you too. Project Orange Crush Hunger is a charity auction. We're asking painters to pick a model from a Shea Army and paint it up in an orange scheme. Matt DiPietro from Privateer Press and this year's Formula P3 Grandmaster Zach Lanier will be painting models for the Army as well. Once it's painted up, it'll be auctioned off for charity. For all the information you need, visit foodmachine.njsobs.com. That's foodmachine.njsobs.com. We hope you will put on your Food Machine event between November 1st and January 2nd this year and report your results in to us. Remember to donate like you've got a pair.
All right, welcome back to Warcast episode 6. Now, again, via the magic of the internet and Skype, we have a guest who's only 4,000 kilometers away, but still in the same country. We've got Beth Creed on the line from West Australia. How are you going, Beth?
Hi, hi. I'm good. How are you today?
Yeah, good, good. So you guys, even though you live in the same country as us, are still 2 hours behind us, similar to the United States, and you're the most isolated city in the world, I believe.
Yes, I think we're actually the most isolated capital city in the world and most isolated city with a per capita over 1 million.
Jeez. And it's crazy as well because when all the Australian, when all the bands come and tour around Australia, they always head out to Perth and it's, you guys are so far away. I don't think people understand exactly how big Australia is. It takes days to drive there from where I am. So welcome. Glad to have you on the show. Now, for those of you who don't know, Beth is here to talk about her tournament that she has basically kicked off the ground called Focused and Furious 2011. So, Beth, do you want to give us just a brief intro about what that's about?
Okay, so it's a 35-point tournament. We're doing something a little bit different with the lists. So it's called Focused and Furious. You can come to the event focused, which means you bring between one and two lists, no restrictions, except for different casters, but we are going to allow both a P and E in your lists. Or you can come to the event furious and bring between three and four lists, and you've just got a use requirement that you've got to use each list at least once during the tournament.
Right, and obviously, if you're going furious, it's a lot more restrictions and it's a bit harder. What are the advantages and disadvantages to both?
Well, the advantages of coming furious mean that you've got four lists, so you're able to bring more different types of lists.
Right. And it sounds like that's also meant to cater for players who may not have a whole bunch of casters under their belt, as well as experienced players who'd want to try a bunch of different casters or, you know, have an element of they've got a lot more surprises that they could bust out in any list.
That was the idea. I mean, people like me who I'm still fairly new and I'm personally not that great, I wouldn't be confident about taking more than two lists to an event. But there's other people in the community who are very good and have been playing for quite a while who are just a little bit bored with only being able to take one or two lists to events. So I thought by having the two options, it caters for newer players and players who aren't as confident, as well as players who are a bit more experienced and want a bit more of a challenge and also to show off their lists.
Yeah, right. That's fantastic. Like, I mean, you obviously, War Machine is still, really kicking off in Australia, and Western Australians probably no exception. So that's really unique that you've got the chance to cater to newer and more experienced players. Have you received many of the lists yet?
Actually, no. I haven't received a single list from anybody.
Well, that's not because there isn't interest in it. I know it's not. What date is it? It's December.
Oh, it's on December 4th.
Oh, great. So it's still over a month away. So that's probably why. I mean, one of the beautiful things about War Machine is you don't actually have to submit a list or anything. Are you accepting lists or just rock up on the day with your list?
Oh, no, you have to submit your list in advance. I will just grab the date for you.
That's cool. I think it is...
It's November the 20-something.
Oh, cool. Okay. So I'll go back in a second. So that's probably why. So I won't be stressed yet. But,
the idea is I wanted to give people as much time as possible to decide whether they want to bring one or two lists, three or four, and then which casters to use, which things, you know, they plan on buying, or people who want to take a fully painted list. Also, it's 30th of November is the list cutoff date, so...
So people still have 2 months to get their list in. So I would not worry. And that's not because you've not had much interest. I've heard that you have a phenomenal amount of prize support. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Okay, so I would just grab our sponsor list.
I mean, just looking at the website as well, you've got people doing different events for the tickets, the assistant organisers, event organisers, press gangers. I mean, this isn't a small event by any means.
Okay, so to start off with, we have a wonderful local store, Tactics, who are also ticket vendors, helping us out selling the tickets and with prize support. We've got another local hobby store called City Models. We've got the wonderful people over at Hobby Tools Australia, and they're over your way, actually. They're fantastic because they have the best prices on all airbrushes and big items. Then we have the Combat Company. It's going to be helping us out as well. Milsims, which hasn't actually been announced yet, so this is kind of announcing it. Milsims.
There you go, you heard it here first. Yeah.
And I think I'm forgetting someone. Oh, no. I do have one more that I can't announce at the moment until it's completed. But Milsims have been wonderful. They've helped us out with some battle foam bags, actually. With a bit of money from ticket sales and then a partial donation from Milsons, we'll have a War Machine bag and a Hordes bag with standard loadout.
That's fantastic. And, I mean, battle foam bags are hard to come by in Australia as well, just because the shipping from both the UK and America is so expensive. So well done on that.
I know. We also have Bunnings Warehouse Australia. They've been wonderful. They've actually helped me out by donating some raw materials to me, a great big airbrush gun so that I can paint the tables a bit quicker, and they've donated enough materials to make 7 tables.
So you're not hosting this at a local shop that already has all its gaming tables set up. I'm building
them all from scratch. I'm actually making all the terrain myself as well. I actually have a resin and silicon system set up in my backyard, and I have done master sculpts of various terrain, and I've been casting them out of resin for about 3 or 4 weeks now.
Gee, that is a huge effort. Wow.
I think I can finally stop making walls at this point.
Far out. When I ran a tournament, it was basically just, here's the rules, here's a list of players, I'll rock up on the day at my local shop and organise it for you. You've gone beyond the Call of Duty, so well done. If you're listening, get behind this. This is ridiculous. Well done.
I haven't actually finished telling you all the sponsors either.
Yep.
Okay, so we also have Embedded Photography. They're going to be doing the event photography for the day, as well as at the end, first place in the painting contest, part of their prize will be a professional studio shoot of their winning models, and the photos for them to use wherever they like.
Wow, and it can be really hard to get good lighting photos of your well-painted models, so that's a fantastic.
And get all the detail.
Yeah.
And then, apart from the sponsor I can't announce yet, our final sponsor is Privateer Press themselves. They've provided us with a Stormstrider to give away as a prize, as well as there's going to be another special prize from them. So they hinted, said as much, that it's going to be a signed poster of some kind. So I'm very excited when I get it and I get to see what it is.
Wow. And PP are really good at supporting their community. How did you get in touch with them?
I stayed up till 2 a.m. and called them.
Oh, wow.
What it was is I really, really wanted the Steamroller trophies. And because I'm not a store and I'm not a club, I thought I'll give them a call and just ask them and say, pretty, pretty please, could I have the Steamroller trophies? and just telling them about the event, they got really excited and offered to help me out.
And that was when you called the States?
Yes. I have called them about 5 or 6 times now.
So if people want to get along, they should probably just get along so they can help you pay that phone bill then.
Oh, no, see, I talk a lot, so I have those unlimited plans.
That is really phenomenal stuff. We really haven't had, like, a tournament either on the East Coast, which is far more populated than the West Coast of Australia. So, well done. If people are lucky enough to live in Western Australia, where should they go to get more information?
More information is available online on WestGamer. It's currently
that's the Western Australian war gaming forums, isn't it?
Yes, where we all organise games and announce tournaments. Information is also available on Rankings HQ, as well as you can buy tickets through Rankings HQ.
Sure.
And I'm working on a blog, but not so good with making blogs, so still working on it.
You really sound like you got your plate full. I mean, you've got all these sponsors, you're making terrain, you're running a unique tournament, trial with the focused list and the furious list is something that I really haven't heard of before. That's really well done. And now the interesting thing about this is that you are actually of the opposing sex. Have you found that what sort of maybe difficulties have you encountered being? Or I can't see many. I can see it being mostly a positive thing. Girls in gaming. Our press gang over here, his girlfriend plays, and a lot of the guys really enjoy versing her, I guess. What have you found that's been like sort of really interesting running this tournament and getting it up and happening?
I mean, as there's only 2 female War Machine Hordes players in Western Australia that I know of, myself and a really nice girl named Kim, and we get along really well, luckily. But the only bad thing I found was people kept asking my partner if he had painted my models, assuming that he was the one painting.
Yeah, right.
And then they'd find, and now people ask him if I painted his model, so it's a bit funny. But I found everybody's really nice, so I haven't really noticed.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, just moving away from the tournament itself slightly, did you get into it because you were into painting and modelling and sort of creative arts, or did you get into it because your partner was playing, or how did you really get involved and happening in the game?
I've been a gamer of many kinds for years, so I really, really enjoy strategy board games, Euro games. I enjoy video games and used to work in a video game store. And then about a year and a half ago, started playing GURPS, a generic universal role-playing system. And then a friend of mine tried to get me into Warhammer and into 40K. And so a couple of friends and my partner and I, we started doing that. And then my friend Jason introduced me to War Machine, and I went, "Oh, pretty! I like that one better." And yeah, moved over there.
And moved on. Was it the steampunk nature of it, or the fantasy, or what was it?
Definitely the steampunk thing. I'm very much into steampunk.
Yeah. A lot of the guys over here are as well. I mean, the War Machine community in general is so happy to help out as well. So that's really good that they've all sort of got behind you and helped you out as well. One other thing I was going to ask was, Do you find the game is different from any other games that you've played before? And what made you choose Signar as well?
It is very different to anything I've played before. I mean, probably the closest thing I've played before would be GURPS. A lot of the elements work in a similar way with rolling to hit and skill checks and things like that.
Yep.
So it has been a very big learning curve for me because I haven't actually played any tabletop games before.
Right. So you also have to learn dice probabilities and inches and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, and I am absolutely awful at judging distance.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying, the press gang over here, his girlfriend works in fashion. And so her math is just completely off, but she likes the look of models and can actually get distances. So it's funny when people come from different aspects and they know bits and pieces that will help them in one area of the game, but might not necessarily in the other.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been a lot to get my head around, as well as because I'm used to playing GURPS, which is a room full of rather geeky people and pieces of paper and dice, or playing strategy board games and strategy card games. Visually, it's very different as well.
Yeah, sure. Sure. How long have you been playing Wormshape?
Hang on.
Just involved in the hobby over there?
I ordered my first lot of models last year. So end of last year.
That's when a lot of Australians started to take it up. So over almost the last 12 months, have you seen the Western Australian community grow and change?
It's definitely grown. There's a lot more people playing a War Machine now than there was when I started. And I don't know, it's a very nice community. Everybody's really nice to each other.
Yeah, that's the thing I've found about Privateer Press players. Everybody is really nice. I mean, the game is quite competitive, but people still get along so well. And that's something pretty special about the community that we have, and it's really supported by people like you running tournaments and the press gang is getting behind it. So it's really grown over there as well.
Well, over here, I mean, being so far away, it takes forever to get anything posted to you.
Yeah.
The Storm Strider took about 4 or 5 weeks to get here in the end, and it's just being so far away. So when people need to do a parts order from Privateer Press, they'll post in the forum, "I'm doing a parts order, who wants in?" And, you know, people will do a lot of combined orders like that, which I think is really nice.
Yeah, we do that over here as well, especially with Battle Foam, because the shipping just can be so expensive. So everyone gets in there and helps each other out. The games are quite short as well, which helps the community. You can meet a lot of people and get a lot of games in as well, I found.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot, Beth. Again, if you're lucky enough to be over in Western Australia, I wish I could get there, but, I mean, 4,000 kilometres and a lot of money for a student. if you're in Western Australia and you want to check it out, just hit up the West Gamer forums that are located at westgamer.com. Thanks a lot, Beth. Is there anything else you wanted to mention regarding the tournament or anything else in general?
I thought I'd just make a small mention of the venue that we're holding the event in.
Sure.
It's going to be held at Gilkerson's DS in the ballroom. So we're going to have a whole venue to ourselves with a licensed bar specializing in absinthe cocktails. We'll have a 6-foot projector screen and 4 mounted LCDs with a live leaderboard throughout the day. And we'll have spare tables set up for people who want to play board games, or if we have any spare tables, they're welcome to bring along their own whichever game system.
But they should pretty much be playing War Machine.
And it'll be free entry for spectators. Yes, they should.
That's fantastic.
Oh, there's something very, very important I forgot to mention. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
This is also done in the name of charity. 10% of ticket sales are going to go towards helping disadvantaged kids. What we're doing is a raffle where out of ticket sales, we're going to provide a $100 gift voucher. And to enter the raffle, you need to bring with you new or pre-loved board games, card games, puzzles, and you'll get raffle tickets in return. And those puzzles and games, they go towards disadvantaged kids who wouldn't normally get a Christmas present. So we're going to be giving them over to St. Vincent de Paul to donate them to the children themselves on our behalf. And any that don't go there, like ones that may be missing a couple of pieces, are actually going to go to some of the St. Vincent de Paul shelters, as well as some of the youth drop-in centres.
That's phenomenal. That's really good. You've really gone beyond the call of duty, Beth. Well, if people want to, so again, that's the West Gamer forums, westgamer.com. If anyone wants to, what's the best way to get in contact with you? To send you a private message?
PM me on West Gamer, or send an email to focusedandfurious@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you pretty quickly as well.
Too easy. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, Beth, and all the best with your tournament. I'm sure it will be an outstanding success.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Thanks a lot.
Welcome back. In the studio, we actually now have a new bunch of guests. We've got Mr. Shaden Jay coming to get you, Aaron Harwood, James Morehouse, and one Jennifer Henderson.
How you going?
Good.
Good. Okay. So we're going to talk about Anastasia Debray now, who is a mercenary character solo as our model spotlight. This is pretty interesting because she only works for two factions, which are Signar and Menoth.
And Mercs, of course.
So we've run through her basic stat line. She's very fast, speed 7, and she's got a very good defense of 16, but the rest of her stats are pretty average. She's armor 12 with 5 boxes, meaning she'll be able to shrug off a few AoEs here and there.
If she's lucky.
Maybe one.
If she's lucky.
So she's got support written all over her. She's got Pathfinder and Stealth, so that'll help her a bit.
Yeah.
And Ambush, which means it's going to help her a lot.
Yeah.
So from turn 2 onwards, you can deploy her within 3 inches of a chosen table edge. And that's not completely within.
It's not the opponent's table edge you can't start on?
No, it's either left or right.
It's left or right.
Yeah.
So, and that's within 3 inches, so up to 4 inches, basically, because she's on a small base.
Yep.
She's got intelligence, which is +1 to the starting roll, which means 2/3 of the time you're going to beat your opponent for the starting roll. She's got parry, which means you can just run through and no one cares. But the big one is espionage, which is her star action with a range of 5. If you target an enemy warcaster or warlock and they're in range, friendly models within her model slash units, so you only have to tag one model in a unit to get it to work, within her commander 8, can immediately make a full advance and normal attack, which is pretty huge.
I've been on the receiving end of that with Terminus even, and he didn't
like it.
He was on 2 hit points after that.
It's a pretty open ended thing as well. The interesting parts to it is that it's a star action, so you don't have to roll. It's not a check. It just works.
Yep.
And also, she's got a speed of 7 and it ranges 5, so that's a 12-inch threat on just using it. So she can run on turn 2 and then use it. But the big thing is, it just says models with, basically, models slash units within 8 of her can make an attack. Full stop. Doesn't have to be a melee attack or anything. It can be magic or ranged.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be against the caster. It can just be an attack. Mm. So much utility there. You're getting a lot of mileage. She's, for a 2-point solo that I personally, I don't see her that much, but in the games I do, she's worth a weight in gold.
Yeah, she either gets... Well, you're Legion, so she gets taken out straight away. But against anybody else who can't do
point
that...
Point and click.
Yeah, against anyone else who can't do that, she's a real threat, especially to frontline casters, such as Terminus.
And when she's generally running around in a forest or behind cover or something, she's hard to hit. She takes a decent, like, concentrated fire to get rid of.
Yeah.
Because if she does get that tagged espionage off, you're in trouble.
And she's
massive.
Stealth as well, so you've got to get them in pretty close to get that.
You've got
to
get AoEs.
So once again, Legion is pretty much there.
Yeah, you've got to get AoEs or have a Seraph. But, so you've played against Anastasia, Aaron. How'd that go?
Well...
Along with the caster that you were versing as well.
Yeah, I was versing E. Haley.
With Terminus.
Using Terminus. And, of course, I underestimated exactly the threat range on basically everything.
I do that all the time.
And also, the +1 for E. Haley getting the first turn as well is pretty huge.
Yeah.
She loves getting first turn as well for her feet.
So basically what happened was Terminus moved up turn 1. He got first turn. Ran up his army. I ran up my army. In turn 2, Terminus was on 2 health and under E. Haley's feet.
And getting telekinesis away.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how did Anastasia, when I came over and I was watching that game, what part did she play in it?
Everything ran within range of Terminus, except for the Stormclad, which charged and beat him up really bad. And then Anastasia gave everybody an extra attack on him.
Yeah.
Oh, and the espionage, yeah. They can make a full advance and attack. It doesn't have to be against the enemy warcaster.
It can just be like attacking against anything.
Oh,
with
wow.
Range.
Okay.
And,
I might see the plural on that.
What's
that unit
name?
Yeah, so you tag... If there's one of your friendly models of a unit of 10, the whole unit can make it. Like, it's...
Not
the Black
13th
just carved through an entire unit of Bane Thralls in one unit, of one turn.
It's so good. Like, yeah, she's good, especially with those casters that can really use a bit of Signar and Protectorate. So Signar have a lot of, a lot of the Signar casters getting another shot or like a defender getting another shot as well can be brutal. She can really spell the end for any caster out there. her weapons and stuff are a bit of a joke. If you're using them, you've probably
because it's a special action. So yeah.
If you're using them, you've probably stuffed up.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's quite straightforward. Like, she gives your army a lot of extra utility, and you have to deal with her. She's a threat the whole time. I think that's pretty much it for her. Hey?
Yeah. She's pretty straightforward, but really good.
Yeah.
She's good.
Well,
four stars out of five.
Four and a half stars. I'd see it again. I wouldn't take my child to see it, but yeah, definitely.
Great. I'd date her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has a great set of throwing knives. So our discussion and our final topic for this week is something a bit different, actually. We'll give it a run. I think it's actually something that would interest most people. We've got my girlfriend Jen in the studio. And we were talking the other night but we were talking about when I was interviewing the girl from Western Australia, Beth. Jen brought up a few points which were pretty interesting. Do you remember what they were?
Not really.
well, luckily for you, I do. Because you mentioned saying that I asked you, do you think this is like a good thing that we're doing? We're running a podcast and we're playing board games, essentially. But you said, yeah, it's cool. You're meeting all these people. You're learning another like set of rules. You're sort of learning another language, creating all this stuff. It's pretty good. What's it like being looking at like sort of the nerd world from someone who isn't a nerd and really doesn't have any interest in it at all? What's it like being an observer?
Well, I don't know. Everyone has their own sort of thing they do, I guess, in their own time, and I just see it as like you guys having your own fun.
But you see,
it's like nerds. Like, it's kind of like it's like your own language. Like, I sit there and I'm like, yeah, James is just off like being nerdy in his like world of nerdiness, or like, you know, like I don't know anything about ice hockey, like, but ice hockey players are really into their ice hockey and they're like, yeah, let's beat each other up because we play ice hockey.
Yeah, you're
Canadian.
You know all about ice
hockey. Yeah, it's fun to watch.
But the thing you mentioned that struck me was you think it's like a good thing. It's a positive thing. We're not sitting there, you know, like to give an extreme example, we're not sitting in our bedrooms taking drugs, and we're literally doing a positive thing for a community, and we're sort of like just interacting with people who have a common interest on all these different levels. And as an observer or someone who has to put up with me going away for days at a time to play toy soldiers, it's actually really cool having a girl that thinks it's like a positive thing, because it is, but can like actually is aware of what's going on.
Mm. Yeah, it's just like, I know, it's just your thing that you like to do, and it's a social thing for you, I guess. And
yeah, as in like we don't go shopping. We don't go to Sydney for a weekend to go shopping for 5 rounds a day or
like, 5 rounds.
I don't know. I guess it's just
stay.
Wow. It's just like our thing. Like Shane's girlfriend actually plays the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's a cool chick. What does she? I mean, it would be great to have her here. But what does she reckon? It's like, because she only just started playing recently as well.
Yeah, this is her first foray into the world of nerdiness as well. I think she's kind of found a niche. She's real comfortable with it.
Yeah.
She enjoys it. It is a social thing for her as well. Yeah, I don't know. She
got another one of her friends in on it too, didn't she?
Yeah. They'll be back. She keeps on trying to bring other friends along as well.
Trying to,
well, they don't believe her that it's fun, and it's the sort of thing that if it clicks with you, it clicks with you.
See, that's the thing. I asked Jen a few times if she wanted to come and see, just to see if it was something that vaguely interests her.
Yeah.
Nah. And that's cool. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's just like for courses, not
exactly.
For
course, it's like,
and I mean, if we spent every moment together as well, it would be a bit like too much as well. Yeah. So you gotta have your space.
Yeah, and everyone has to have their own like interests and stuff.
The other thing in this game is as well, there are a lot of sort of older people that play as well,
yeah,
and they have families and they have established relationships that they've obviously gone on for a long time with, and it's been successful. I guess that's a slightly different story, but
I don't know. I think it's all about balancing the hobby with the rest of your life. I think that's what I like about War Machine, is the fact that you have an on average older player sort of playing the game.
Yeah.
You guys sort of represent the youngest in the...
It doesn't really appeal to, like, the...
Definitely 18 plus minimum.
Yeah, which is good. I mean,
I don't know if other areas have a different kind of scene and, you know, they have all the little... tots running around playing.
That's Warhammer 40K. No. I mean, well, for just an example, we had Beth earlier on before, who was like a lovely girl, super keen about it. I've never met like someone so keen, and it's really good to have like not only someone within the hobby that's giving it a completely different like perspective as well, but is coming at it from a different angle that I don't know, maybe guys can't always get.
Never met somebody that keen about it, says the guy who meets every second week to talk about...
to run a radio show.
Literally spare time building a website to...
Literally all of his spare time.
Yeah.
Have you been sitting there as he's, like, racking his head on how to use the internet?
Yeah, or, like, reading stuff about... nerdness. And I'm just like,
We're like watching a movie and I start reading a War Machine book instead.
No way, serious?
No, not really.
I'd be surprised. I've not come across anyone as obsessed as you, James.
He's like closet obsessed though, and he still like goes outside during the day and stuff, so it's sort of like socially.
He still goes outside.
Yeah, I don't know. I got obsessed with War Machine pretty much the moment I started playing it. I started off by watching a friend play a tournament, and I had no idea about the game. I've never seen it before. I was just like, oh wow, this looks like fun. And I actually spent 2 days being real creepy, hanging out at this tournament, just watching people play, and they were like, do you know him? My friend was tempted to say no, but I immediately bought a battle box and went home and put it together, and we played like my first game at the end of the second day of that tournament when my friend was absolutely wrecked after 2 days.
And he doesn't want to teach you, friend. This is what movement is.
But it was fantastic. It was really I don't know. And since I immediately started running tournaments and stuff like that. Once I felt I had control over the rules and all that sort of stuff, I started running tournaments.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at with this is that we're doing something good for a bunch of people that have a common interest, and we're not wasting our time in a sense. We're trying to do something. Like, I mean, theoretically, we have sponsors, we have minimal amount of income, but we're making we're not spending our money. We're slightly making money. It's just a productive venture as well as it brings a community together, and it's pretty cool to have chicks who appreciate that, I guess. Yeah. Even if they're not entirely aware of Anastasia's speed 7 is better than average, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cool. What are your thoughts? Any outstanding thoughts, Aaron?
Well, I'd like to use this opportunity just to talk about...
To pay you all out?
Just to talk about is it Geek Nation Tours? Yeah.
But they
do stuff for spouses and stuff and people like...
Yeah, I showed Jen that the other night.
If we go over to America next year, you know, Jen could come along and chill out on Miami Beach or whatever, other side of America, just as far away as possible.
I wouldn't want to go on a holiday with Jen where I don't see Jen.
That's
a different thing. Actually, just briefly again, shout out to Beth. Yep. Who we had on. She sent me a message today for Jen. She wants to send Jen a cupcake because she would have been one of the forgotten spouses when we play Toy Soldiers. She's got cupcakes organised for the partners and wives and all that. It's just...
What an awesome chick.
Anyway.
That's so cool.
Do you have any other thoughts, Jen?
She was so enthusiastic.
Well, that too. But yeah, she was cool. But say the three guys running a radio show about it. True.
War Machine is a community-based game.
Without community, it would be nothing.
Exactly. I mean,
sitting on Vassal versus myself.
you need to play against other real people in the world, so you have to have people skills. You have to be able to be a good sport.
You don't need people skills with their help.
Well, they help. And War Machine tends to attract people that do have them.
It gives us, let's be brutally honest, if we didn't all play War Machine, we probably wouldn't know each other, and we wouldn't even be thinking about going overseas together.
I would have no idea.
It gives us a thing that we can all get equally pumped up and excited about together. Yeah. So, I don't know, it's just...
Yeah.
It's a cool thing. I really should be spending my time studying and working, but... stop that. Got to run a radio show.
I'm going to plead the Fifth Amendment on that and say that I'm not going to say anything that would incriminate me.
Yeah.
We have a Fifth Amendment now in Australia.
I just imported it for the purposes of this show.
Yeah.
But was there anything else that... Because you had some interesting thoughts, but I can't exactly...
Yeah, I can't remember what they
verbalise exactly what they were. It was...
It's just like when I, like, hear you talking about nerd stuff, like, just before. I just kind of tune out and I'm like, oh, yeah, James just speaking Japanese. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just...
It's just different.
Different.
I guess if you went off for a couple of hours every second day or something and started talking about shoes...
Yeah, which is what I do anyway, so.
Not actually. It's a two-way street. You've got to come to the party.
I think.
Or like hipsters, are they just sit around talking about bikes and crap?
Yeah.
They're just another community bikes. Group, yeah, I guess, yeah, that yeah. have, like, a mutual interest.
They have their musical interests and their...
How many dimensions are there to having a bike?
Hey,
like, get on it and ride it,
dude. That would be like someone saying to us, "How many dimensions are there to toy soldiers? You put it on the table and good."
Yeah, like exactly. You fool.
It's like all these hobbies and
yeah,
stuff.
It's really exactly.
Just like,
there's as much depth as you want there to be, and yeah. And we're pretty lucky in War Machine in that it's an expansive game, so we don't have to make up depth ourselves. It's already all there. We just talk about it.
Yeah,
and we just, you know. You've just been grinning the whole time, Aaron.
It's amusing.
Anyway, I think that's probably it for the show.
Yeah, I think that covers just about everything from nerdy to not.
And that's pretty much it. I'd just like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, the fantastic irresistibleforce.com.au, as well as battlefoam.com. Also, if you haven't remembered, everything's on warcastonline.com, and you can update your new feeds there for the last time. All the iTunes links, all the contact us if you want to grab us on Skype, all that kind of stuff. We've got a new Twitter, twitter.com/warcast, easy. And finally, don't forget to check out Dan's Legion Army on eBay.
Yep. Yes,
there's a link on the Facebook page, and I'll make sure there's one on the homepage. Yep. Anything from you guys?
Thank you very much for listening. And
I'd just like to thank Jen as well for coming into the show to talk about something she has no idea about.
Yeah, I'm really sorry.
I don't talk about this at all before, but I'm just going to say I'd like to thank Simon Hall for not showing up to any more of the Super Series qualifiers, so I don't have to wear a dress to TempleCon.
Because if Simon qualifies, Aaron's wearing a dress to the tournament of my choice. So even if we don't make it to TempleCon, Super Series finals, Jen, you got a nice dress for Aaron lined up?
I don't know what just happened.
All right. Thanks again for listening, guys. Jump on the Facebook if you want to contact us is the best way.
Yep.
And, we'll catch you next episode.
Woohoo!